Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Carl Carlson.
And this is Fred Shankberg. Hey, Carl.
Hey, Fred. I'd like to talk with you about not a letter that I received or an email, but an in-person when I was at RAMS. And I had a really nice conversation with someone. I won't mention names and companies, that type of thing. But it came down to somebody who really knows their stuff on reliability, how to influence other groups and management to get support.
Well, it's
they
easy.
Realize
it's easy. Pretend you don't know enough and ask for help.
Oh,
everybody
yes.
will love you. And then no.
And so this is where they needed to get support for FMEAs, or they needed to get support for reliability programming, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And I've always believed that you need management support, and therefore influencing management if you don't have it right away. In other words, ideally you're in a company where management is enlightened and top down, they're full on of getting reliability and safety and FMEA and everything else. But in the real world, it's not always like that.
Yep.
And so one answer, of course, is getting a pocket of support. In other words, you get a mentor or a champion, somebody that is in the higher level meetings that can influence them, and you talk to them offline. Another way, of course, is that you get invited, but then you got to know your stuff and how to speak to management.
Mm-hmm.
And what this person brought up, this person is so passionate. They really know their stuff. But he said he comes across aggressively, or he's almost too passionately, and it turns people off. And so he tries to get them to do things, but he gets so excited that they just sort of back away. And it reminded me of the important subject that we've talked about a lot of influencing, yeah. How we cannot do this alone. You can't design for reliability by yourself as a reliability engineer. You have to influence the designers. And so my comment back to him, and we had a really good conversation, is the importance of building rapport, the importance of making a connection first with people before you influence them. And so I just thought that would be interesting to talk about, and I bet you have a similar view.
Yeah, I do. And it's the proper order. Is you have to actually connect with other people so that, you know, and I'm using air quotes here, but they can see you then. They actually listen. At some point, then you want them to seek you out for advice and information and so on. But it's part of the path to becoming influential is part. You do a good job. You do what your data analysis is accurate and verifiable. Your failure analysis is insightful, and you know you use the right tools at the right time. You choose the right projects, and you create value. You create results. That's not enough. And the personal side is building rapport, which then leads to building trust, which then allows you to have influence. Is the way I think of it. But rapport in and of itself, one thing when I was at Hewlett Packard and I was doing my first trip to Japan, and it was, and they did this wherever country you went to at that time, is they sent me, HR would send me a little packet that basically said, here's the cultural differences you need to be aware of. Right. And it went from everything from word choice, what colors meant, what's a greeting ritual. You know, in Japan, it's very different than in the U.S. U.S., you get into a meeting room, you throw your business cards around the table. Remember business cards? In Japan, no, you didn't do that. You picked it up. You held it with both hands. You made a comment about their business card. It was in Korea was similar in that regard. But it went into all kinds of things. And it was, I remember the one in Singapore is the one of the first things in the booklet of this bit of training that you got was they will not say no. It's just not part of their culture. If you say, hey, can you meet for lunch tomorrow? They may have plans and fully booked and have no intention of having lunch with you. They will not say no. And so part of building rapport is understanding that not everybody's like you. You know, if you're going to a place in Europe, I mean, country to country can vary dramatically of how people interact, how they talk to each other, what's allowed in discussions, what's taboo in discussions. It's amazing the variety of things that once you get out of Topeka, Kansas, there's a lot of variation in the world. Not to pick on Topeka, but
okay, no, but so true. My first trip to China, and I know what you're saying, and I agree with it. I sought out a colleague who did 4 months. He moved his whole family. I'm sorry, not 4 months, 2 years. Mm-hmm. He and his family moved there as part of the management development program. Mm-hmm. So he was assigned to work in a plant in China, and he brought his whole family there. And so I sat down with him and said, tell me about the culture, because I need to know that, because I'm not going to influence people if I don't know the culture. And that's really what you're saying.
Yep.
Bringing it back then to a group of people, well, like you may talk to a group or you may go to management. It's the same thing. There's a culture in a company. Every company has a culture that you need to be aware of. And individuals in companies have their own culture. And so it's important to know what that is, what makes people interested, what they're interested in. So let's look at this in terms of a process. You said right at the beginning, and I agree, first of all, you need to know your stuff. Nothing replaces the idea that you know what your job is, and that's a given. And then building rapport with an individual or even a group. And it's not easy if you tend to be on the introvert side. And I've had to work at this because I tend to be, you know, a little more introvert than extrovert. And I've had for a lot of my career, I've worked at it. And so behind the scenes, I'm thinking, what stories do I have? How do I introduce myself? How do I get to know someone? You know, I'm talking years back, mm-hmm. where I had to practice this. In recruitment school, they taught us, don't start the recruitment interview until you've developed some type of, you've got to know somebody. Ask them what they've been doing. Ask them, you know, whatever.
How was their flight? You know, is the hotel good for you?
What's the weather like where you're from?
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing. And so it can be very simple, but if it doesn't come naturally, that's okay. Practice it.
Yep.
Just, you know, get in a room and just pretend the scenario and start doing it until you get comfortable with it. And that's the point I want to make, because engineers are not necessarily naturally effusive or necessarily naturally make a connection with people.
A series of courses that I took that is an engineering team we're in, and the team I was on, we did interviews and we went and talked to people and we made presentations and so our boss was, you need to get really good at this. And I remember the very first course I went to, it was about building rapport. It was, how do you interact with another person so that, one, they actually can hear you. I mean, it's so that they don't have to run all these filters and all these translations, because I'm hitting them with verbiage and terms and contacts and context and everything else that's from a different culture. You know, and it could be just worldwide, but it also just different points of view. And so the vast majority of the gist of the course was included body language. So if they're sitting down and leaning back with their legs crossed, you sit back with your legs crossed. And it felt, from my engineering point of view, it was techniques and strategies of watching what other person do, what kind of words they use, what were their priorities, all these things, and then mimicking it so that they felt more comfortable. And I thought, this was so manipulative. And the gist of the whole course, though, was you have to be aware of where they are, who they are, what's important to them. You have to be super attuned to getting to know their point of view. That builds rapport faster than anything.
And this gets complex. I'm going to add some complexity to it. Because you're absolutely right. You want to build that rapport and you need to get to know people. But the reason practice is important is there are things you can do wrong and you don't want to make those mistakes for instance, you may not think of it, you should, but when you're talking about somebody of the opposite sex and you're a guy, you say, well, that's really nice hair you have or something. Mm-hmm. That can offend some people because it may be you come across like you're a little pushy or whatever.
Oh, but if they walk in and say, "Hey, I'm just back from the beauty salon. What do you think?" Then you can comment.
That's different, right? Exactly. So you want to be aware of those things. And I'll give another example. After 9/11, I made a mistake because I was in a recruiting interview. We got sent to a campus, and somebody was from that I was interviewing in a room. Me and that person, and that's all. And I know the first thing is to get to know somebody. Mm-hmm. They were from the Middle East. I didn't even think about that. I just thought, I'll get to know them. Where are you from?
Yeah. And they thought that was immediate filter. I'm out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you want to practice ahead of time the awkward moments so that you don't tripwire a mistake and so that you're comfortable what you can do, what you shouldn't do, and that doesn't interrupt your flow. Because part of being of the rapport is you want to be natural, you want to be comfortable, you want the other person to be comfortable. And so that takes some practice, and you can do role playing on that if you have a good friend that will role play with you.
After these courses, I mean, I had two groups of judges. One was my family, and my wife would, I'd do something that was obviously a technique learned in the course. And she'd go, "You're doing that thing on me again, aren't you?" And so the goal was to use these techniques and attributes and everything else and practice and practice and practice because it was safe till she didn't notice it anymore. I think she eventually just gave up telling me, but I got good enough. And at work, we all had the same training and we could see it. And there the criteria was it what was the term we use? Copacetic. It natural? Did it come from a good place? Right. If it was a forced move, if you see an actor over forcing their gestures and their facial expression and everything else, they're trying too hard and you can see it a mile away. And so the practice part is find somebody that you can trust that knows what you're trying to do and let them give you feedback and get honest, straightforward feedback. What's working, what's not working. Like if you're doing a presentation and you're working on gestures, so you get more participation, you want to get more questions. And I want to try this, this, and this. Have somebody in the audience you trust to see what worked and what didn't work and be your eyes and ears or what's going on and give you the feedback. And that's the way to learn this stuff.
It really is. The part of the role playing is to introduce different cultural aspects. Like in this case where the gentleman came to me, he said, and I won't go into the specific culture or background, but he tends to talk loudly. Mm-hmm. And when he gets passionate, and that's good. I'm doing it right now. Yep. So when you feel strong, but that may not be the rapport, the first thing you do.
Right.
So what was happening to him is he was all excited to get them influenced so they would support him. And he would just talk loudly and talk a little bit too close to them and they would turn away.
Yep.
And so part of that practice is to have different roles so that you understand different people and how they are. And that when you get to know them, you get to know them in a way that's comfortable for them.
Well, one of the tricky parts of building rapport is there's a difference between one-to-one, right? And you could ask somebody and then remember 4 months later that their kid had just started grade school or something like that. And you could ask about it. Some people take notes and others, they remember it. And I've run into some people that hadn't seen anybody in this person in 10 years and I could ask a relevant question about them. and it's, how did you remember that? Like, whatever. But it was important, you know? And part of that is genuinely ask, you know, being interested in other people. And I think that if it doesn't come natural to you, it takes practice. And it doesn't have to be about your family or where you, you know, come from or what's the weather. It could also be, you know, well, that's an interesting idea. Did you learn that in school or where'd you pick that up? You know, or tell me more about, or, you know, what's the priority here? There's so many different options. What's the priority here? You know, one of the best interview questions I always ran into is, well, tell me about yourself. It's fascinating what people choose to talk about. But if you just listen, you can learn a lot.
That's a great point. And so you talked about the difference between one-on-one and a group. So I have a couple comments there. Mm-hmm. In a group, beware of humor. You may think something's funny and other people may not. So if you use humor, make sure you know your group and make sure you've practiced it. And because it's a double-edged sword. It works in some cases and it doesn't in others. And when it doesn't work, it really, really doesn't work.
Yeah.
And the other thing I'll comment is part of knowing, I'll just use this as a story on the one-on-one side is I've got tripped up because I'll say to people, do you have married, do you have children, you know, that kind of thing. And that can tripwire because my contact at a company, I'm having lunch and I said, you have children? He says, yeah, I had one child and he's was killed in a gang, you know, da-da-da-da.
Right.
And it was a really awkward moment. And it opened up. We got connected very nicely because I listened. Mm-hmm. But you have to be aware that people have come from different backgrounds and have different stories and their lives are different than yours. And so that all is part of the practice and getting comfortable. It's so important that you build the rapport with people, but you do it in a way that's comfortable and is easy. And so sometimes it's good to start simple.
Start one-on-one, do all that stuff. Now the tricky bit is you could go around to the four key people that are going to make a decision to fund your FMEA project, right? And training and everything. And they all nod and agree. That sounds great. That'd be wonderful. Everything else. But then they get in the room together. Now it's a different entity. Is that group has its own dynamics, has its own behaviors, own norms, own stuff. And they all have their own stories with each other about what's priorities. If I show too much support here, is that weakening my ability to get this other project done? It's quintupled more complicated.
Yeah, exponentially. And what I try to do when I talk to a group is I try to learn from individuals first, like maybe one person who's in the group or somebody who knows the group, what's important to that group. Mm-hmm. What do they thrive on? What really gets them supportive? And so you get to know the groups through one or two individuals first, if you can, do your homework.
Yeah, but not one person, because the one person will have their view of the group, and it's not always accurate. And it's the group's group, and they have to be safe as a group. It's the same with an individual. They have to feel safe. They have to be willing to listen to you and talk to you, and that's part of building rapport. A group is the same way. It's, you know, and you've done it, Carl. I've seen you do it. Is like, well, how many people are this way or that way, or what questions do you have? Let's make it safe for you to raise a question or to make a comment or whatever. It's because you're demonstrating that you're interested. And two is that when you do get a question, you answer it and very cordially. And then, you know, that's a great question. I mean, what did everybody else think about that? All right, let's talk about it. It's a technique to make the group safe. Now, sometimes you get in a group and there's one senior, person that if they frown, the group's dead, right? If they're engaged, the group's engaged, you know, and you have to be able to see that happening in a group, and it may or may not be obvious at all, and roll with it. But they're not there to hear your presentation. They're there to react to your presentation. And you got to pay attention to the reaction.
Yep. And they're going to make some decisions based on that. It's good to know who that that leader, that opinion leader, who people look to ahead of time, if you can. And the and so that preparation is important. I don't want to scare people off. I know we're talking about a lot of preparation things to do. It can be as simple as this. Let's say you're walking into somebody's office to get their support on FMEA. Well, walk in there and say, hello, I'd just like to talk about FMEA. What's been your experience?
Yep.
And listen to them. Yeah.
And don't jump on the first one to defend it. Listen.
Right. Listen. Yeah.
And you will get a champion. It's a miracle how that happens. You don't have to convince them by what you say and do. It's by listening and understanding what's important to them. And sometimes just listening does it. There's plenty more to it, right? And I think we've got old chapters and stuff we've written on it in various terms, and there's plenty of courses and all kinds of things out there. But we don't get taught this in engineering schools of how to listen, how to influence, how to lead, how to organize, how to, to be influential in your work. It's basically waved off. Well, if you do a good job, you'll become influential. Well, that's a piece of it. It's not the whole story.
Well, and part of being influential is to tamp down your ego, because the worst, really, you want to turn people off, to walk into a group or even an individual and start touting what you're good at right off the bat.
Yep. Yeah. And that's almost universal. I haven't found any culture that that's what you do.
Right.
I haven't seen anywhere that works.
So having humility, listening, tamping down your ego. Don't start with what, trying to sell. Yep. Those are all pointers, but this is such a big subject, building rapport. We've touched it on in 20 minutes, but there's so much to learn about it. If you're a listener and you have a question about it, in other words, you'd like to learn some aspect, or you have a story about it, or you'd like to ask us our view on how you do things or how you could do things, please get in touch with us, because this is a really important subject.
It is. It very much so is. And you can get in touch with us a number of different ways. One of them is over at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And you can leave a voice message for us. You can literally join the conversation, or you can leave a written comment. You can get in touch with Carl and I and the other hosts of the show on LinkedIn or through our About pages. There's plenty of ways for you to join the conversation, and we'd really sincerely like you to do so, because it's led to so many great topics over years that we've been doing this.
Yes.
All right, Carl.
Very good.
I think I'm going to go lay down. I'm done influencing today.
Your influence quota is complete.
That's it.
Build some rapport with your pillow.
That's right. All right, Carl. Thanks much. We'll talk to you again soon.
Talk to you soon, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.